He also was known as a good troop leader. As a Ranger Company commander during the 1983 invasion of Grenada, he needed to attack a Cuban manned bunker, so he ordered one of his sergeants to drive a bulldozer toward it, and then had his men advance behind its cover. That improvised moment was memorialized in the climax of Clint Eastwood's 1986 movie, Heartbreak Ridge, although Eastwood changed it to a Marine action because the Corps was more cooperative in helping him film. In Provide Comfort in 1991, Abizaid maneuvered his battalion aggressively yet deftly in northern Iraq. As a general, Abizaid quickly earned a reputation as a bright thinker and a competent low-key manager. At the Pentagon in the early 2000s, he was one of the few in the military who seemed to be able to handle Rumsfeld. As Director of Joint Staff, a key inside slot, he was one of two senior officers who led the way in easing the tense relationship between Rumsfeld's office and the uniformed military. The question, after he took over Central Command, was whether he would live up to the high expectations people had of him. At the Pentagon in July, Abizaid used his first press conference as Chief of Central Command to make a major course correction. "Yes," he announced, "we are indeed in a war in Iraq." "What is the situation in Iraq?" Abizaid said, addressing reporters at the Pentagon after meeting with Rumsfeld. "Opponents of the U.S. presence," he said, speaking with precision, "are conducting what I would describe as a classical guerrilla-type campaign against us. It's war, however you describe it." This went a long way toward clearing up the strategic confusion about what the U.S. military was doing in Iraq and how it was doing it. Asked to explain why he was calling it a war after weeks of hesitancy by Bush administration officials to do so, Abizaid said bluntly, "Well, I think that, you know, all of us have to be very clear in what we're seeing." After Abizaid spoke, Pentagon spokesman Lawrence DeRita, standing at his side in the Pentagon briefing room, jumped in to attempt to undercut the crucial point the general had just made. "The discussion about what type of conflict this is, like so many other discussions we're having within the context of Iraq, is almost beside the point," the spokesman told the reporters. "The issue to remember," he insisted, "was that the fighters wanted to restore Saddam Hussein's regime. So it's worth remembering that, as we kind of have this almost kind of, academic discussion, is it this or is it that?" DeRita appeared to be brushing aside the considered opinion of one of the Army's top generals, the senior commander for Iraq and the rest of the Mideast, who knew more about the area and about war than DeRita did. It was a moment that captured in a nutshell the weakness at the core of the Bush administration's national security team. Strategy was seen as something vague and intellectual, at best a secondary issue, when in fact it was the core of the task they faced. It was the same sort of limited thinking that had led the Bush team first to focus in 2002 and early 2003 almost exclusively on its plan of attack for Iraq rather than on the more difficult but crucial consolidation of that victory, and that also led it to make wildly unrealistic assumptions about post-invasion Iraq and then to fail to develop operational plans as a fallback if its assumptions proved incorrect. By failing to adequately consider strategic questions, Rumsfeld, Franks, and other top leaders arguably crippled the beginning of the U.S. mission to transform Iraq.